Welcome to the Dogs and Deadlifts, Building Better Dogs podcast. If you like a podcast that is raw, unfiltered, and authentic, you have come to the right place. Our goal is to bring clarity around canine fitness and conditioning. We help people ignite their dog's performance and build better dogs. Join your host, Daniel Rose, as we discuss fitness, nutrition, and mindset for dogs. Let's do this.
So welcome back to the Dogs and Deadlifts podcast. Today we have a special guest from Australia in New South Wales, Paul Zupczyk. Hi, Paul.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Good, man. Look, I appreciate you coming on the show. Really looking forward to this chat.
Yeah, me too. Thank you for reaching out and getting me on the podcast. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no dramas, mate. So, you know, as I do with all my guests, mate, let's you know, tell our audience a little bit about your origin and, you know, I suppose go back as far as you want in regards to when you got started. And, yeah, as we will, let the conversation flow.
Yeah, no dramas. So, yeah, my name's Paul Zupczyk. I am the owner-operator of Summerland Dog Training, based in the Northern Rivers of New South Wales. Prior to that, I was a police officer in the New South Wales Police Force for about 10 years, five of those being with the New South Wales Police Force Dog Unit. And then, yeah, I started off my policing career as a general duties constable in Sydney City, LAC, which for those who don't know, it's like in the heart of the CBD of Sydney. So I think like George Street, Opera House, Harbour Bridge, Darling Harbour, Pyrmont, places like that. That's where I started my policing gig.
Yeah, awesome. You know, obviously we've got a lot to talk about here. Obviously, you know, your canine and dog handling career, et cetera. But did you grow up in, you know, Northern Rivers? I'm from Bellingen. I don't think I mentioned that, but
yeah, I was born in Nambour, mm-hmm. in sunny Nambour, and before I moved down to the south coast of New South Wales, in a little town called Batemans Bay, mm-hmm. and I grew up there and finished high school there and jumped straight into university, where mm-hmm. I studied a 4-year degree of commerce, and finished that and realized I don't want to do this degree, and everyone was getting internships and jobs, and I was like, oh, this is not what I want to do. So then I took a year off and thought, well, it's either the cops or the military, and I said, you know what, I'm just going to go to the cops. And basically that's how the policing career started.
Awesome. You know, so 5 years general duties, you mentioned.
5 years in the dogs. Yep. Almost 3.5 to 4 years in general duties. Yeah.
And what made you, or, you know, what did you have a look at the dog side of things?
Mate, to be honest, like, I never planned on joining the dog unit. Like, I always had a, you know, inkling, or, you know, a plan was to get into the TOU, and that was going to be my path. And one day, just on the, I've done my tenure, I was free to, you know, go where I please, basically, from the city. And one day on the screen, so it popped up, expressions of interest for open for general purpose dog handler, mm-hmm. and I was like, yeah, I could do that. I don't see why not. And so that's basically what you know, started the interest in it, mm-hmm. and from there I wrote a report, and that was approved by my command. And then I just followed the bouncing ball, did my physical testing, passed that, then got selected to go do the 5-day selection course, mm-hmm. passed that. And then I was on to the novice course, which is a 16-week handler course to get you up to speed to become an operational police dog handler.
Yeah, awesome. Where was that conducted?
So that was in Sydney metropolitan area. So for the metro handlers. So that was just done in various places throughout the metropolitan Sydney area.
Yeah, awesome, for sure. So, you know, I've got a lot of listeners out there that, and obviously based in Australia, I've got listeners in the US, Canada, the UK, etc. So, you know, for those out there. And I've always get a lot of inquiries as well about, I'd love to be a police dog handler, a militia dog handler, and I, the advice that I give people is, as you mentioned, you've just spent 3 or 4 years, learning to crawl before you walk almost, right?
Yeah, definitely. Especially in the cops. When you get out of the academy, have a thing called a tenure to a station, which is basically your contract that you will stay at that station for 3 years. Okay. And you're not really able to leave that station until that 3 years is done. You can do courses and remain like in that station. Like I did I was in that first 3 years, I was a weapons trainer, did that course. Also did my OSG, which is sort of for the people that don't know, that's like part-time riot squad police training as well, all whilst I was still attached to the Sydney City LAC command. So you can still do things when you're general duties, but you can't really leave that command until your tenure is done.
Yeah. And also, you've mentioned that, a couple of key factors there is like, upskilling the and making your skills, especially operational skills, shit hot when it comes to selection process, right?
Yeah, definitely. And what I think it is, what helped me most is your ability to like listen and just be like follow instructions, because you get that drummed into you from like, when you do these extra courses, like they tell you, and you need to stop. If you keep making that same mistake, you're going to get pinged, and then you're going to be like, well, hang on, why can't you just listen to simple instructions? So all that pre-course, all that, doing the other weapons, which is highly technical, OSG, not so technical, but you just have to do what you're told. Yep. And then that all helped me get into a good place to start my, dog handler selection.
Yeah, for sure. So, you've obviously, we'll just talk through a little bit before we get into some other stuff as well. But you're a green handler, you've been selected. What was, what was day one of your 16-week course like? Can you remember?
A1, we got beasted. I remember it was like, we're just back on the, back on the selection course again, which was hell. Like, so I remember we were in our court dress, court attire, and we just got beasted with like push-ups, running, sprinting, sit-ups. Like I was sweat, like I was drenched in my court attire. Mm-hmm. It's not what I thought would happen. And I was just like, what the hell? I thought we were going to be like working dogs. And that did eventually come, but I think I just wanted to give you a bit of a shock. So the first day, you're just learning basic sort of how to get the dog in and out of a car, just sort of getting you familiarized with holding a potential police dog. Mm-hmm. At the stage that I was given a training dog, like applicants. Mm-hmm. Position. And then it's where it's on us and the trainers to progress like yourself as well as your dog to get to the final stage where you become a certified police dog team.
Yeah, awesome. And so I'm going back 10 years, I'm guessing predominantly German Shepherds.
Yeah. So it was all German Shepherds on my course. Yeah, I had a Sable Shepherd named Mammoth. Actually, before that, the first week I had another dog. And in that first week, the trainers would sort of assess how you like mesh with that dog, and they might make adjustments prior to the actual course starting. So they had a look, they had you play with the dog, just interact with it, and then they would sort of assess who fit which dog best. And then so my first dog was not the dog I eventually ended up having, but after that first change, I stuck with Mammoth throughout my whole policing career. In the dog unit. Yeah,
awesome. So once we'll talk about I really don't talk about methods and stuff like that. I'm real, this is not the podcast to talk about training methodology in regards to positive reinforcement, negative reinforcement, and that sort of stuff. So the elements that you trained, I'd rather talk about those, so you've got your apprehension elements. Can you talk about the elements that you looked at or you were trained in with your dog on the course?
Yeah, so there's five main ones. There's obviously tracking, searching, which is more air scenting, and building searches. We also had man work, so criminal apprehension, obedience, and agility, which is the ability to jump over, crawl through tight spaces and things like that.
Yeah, awesome. So once you completed that program, Sydney location again?
Yeah, so once you finish 16 weeks, you get put on a buddy period where you're working two up because of just to get you in the swing of things. After a few weeks, you're then sent out on your own in the big wide world all by yourself, and you and a dog have to, like, it's like you're free falling. You have, like, your head spinning at jobs. And I remember my first job was just like middle of Parramatta somewhere, and it was a domestic, and then people, you get to the scene, like there's like victims crying and screaming, there's sirens, and you got to get your dog out where you're not really, like, you've been practicing pretty pristine conditions and like none of that sort of stuff you can replicate in training scenarios. It's just like, holy shit, I gotta try and remember what to do. And I stuffed up a lot when I first started, but that's how you learn, I guess. So just made a lot of mistakes and things you learn along the way. And it was definitely an eye-opening experience and something I really look back fond memories.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously, you know, it's led you to the path that you're on today. And we're going to talk about that very, very shortly, you know. But, you know, is there any particular, you know, before we move on, I think that, if you've got a couple of good, worries or something that sticks out in your mind that you always go, holy shit, how did we do that? Or, oh, wow, that was awesome.
I just think that was the best job in the world. Like, I love that job. Like, you basically had a key to the whole city. You had a dog, a police car, and you just responded to jobs. Like, you get to a job and everyone would look at you. Like, I was still just a one drop constable when I joined, and I would rock up to the scene and have like inspectors saying, what do you want? And I'm just like, holy shit. Like, you're in charge of that job, organizing perimeters, organizing, where do you want people? If you want someone to come with you, you're having to think on the fly. And like the type of work I did was what, a lot of people pay money to do. And I was getting paid to do this job and actually put my skills to the test in the most like highest sort of stress and highest stakes scenario. And I was blown away every time I could go to work. I just was like, this is crazy. I'm getting paid to do this.
Yep.
I probably would do it for free. Like, to be honest, it was that much fun. Like, you have this resource which you can take, and nothing else can do the job that you and this dog can do. So it was just an amazing, amazing experience. And anyone in the cops thinking, or any ability to join a dog unit, I highly recommend it. I guess some advice I'd give for any prospective people out there listening, is prior to barrier testing and physical testing, get your fitness up to speed. Like, you will be surprised how many people came to barrier testing and couldn't pass the beep test standard. And I'm just like, are you kidding? It's like, not a surprise. They tell you what you need to get before you arrive. So like, to come there underdone, I'm just like, what have you been doing all this time? Like, and it made me stand out a lot, because I like understood this, and so I trained up to a really good standard. And like, I've been asked, how much do you need on the beep test? I was getting 12-12, 12-13. And that was plenty. It was tons. Probably it was overkill, but it made my job easier during selection, because when they would beast you physically, I was still able to think clearly and have that clarity of thought to then operate and handle a dog. So what they want you to do is, are you able to think under pressure? Are you able to think and make decisions when you've been run off your, run your guts out and push-ups and pull-ups, and now having to think, like, if you're trying to like breathe in, suck them in, how are you going to be able to think clearly? So one, get your fitness on point if you're going to even think about joining, applying for the dog unit. And two, go in there with a clean slate. Like, I know a lot of people have preconceived notions of how a dog train, and they think, oh, look, I know how to train a dog. I've had a history of dog training. Let me just say, don't go in there thinking that you know anything, because you might do, and that's fine. But what the trainers and what the unit want to see is someone that they can shape and mold into what they and how they want their dogs to be trained. So a little bit of advice, even if you do know a lot about dogs, just keep that under your hat, and best you can. They probably will find out anyway, but you can, I recommend doing that. For me, I knew like next to nothing about dogs. I had some pet dogs when I was growing up, and that's about it. And the rest, I just, I was an open book. Didn't take anything to heart. You get called all sorts of weird and wonderful names, and you just like it like water for ducks. You got to, they can see you can work under pressure. But yeah, I guess what the question you asked was, any worries? One that comes to mind is probably a bit of a funny one. I still just wonder what this person was thinking at the time. So it was mid morning on a Sunday in Bankstown, just a personal premises job come in. It was a personal premises on an industrial site. Informant states that multiple intruder alarms have been going off and no one should be on site. So typical job that we would attend at the dog unit. So I get on the radio, dog 76, copy, I'll be blue and five. So I make my way there, and it was just another Bankstown car there. It was actually Bankstown 14, so the supervisor. And we sort of had a look at the site, and there's a fully fenced 2 meter high, you know, that security fencing all the way around. And there's multiple buildings inside this perimeter of that of the fence, so lots of different places a person could hide. Anyway, so I found a way into the building site with my dog, and had Bankstown 14 with me. So I put him on his harness and tracking lead, just see if I could pick up any sort of track. I had no idea where the last known place was, just that intruder alarm going off. So I was just casting for a track. Excuse me. And my dog picked up a track. Boom. We start going along at a good pace, tracking along, turning corners. So whenever I turn a corner, I sort of, you know, that's my chance to confirm that we're actually following something. And he takes me up into just a nondescript building. And we enter the building, and I can instantly smell cigarette smoke. Like someone's been here, like having a dart. And I was like, okay, well, we're on here. Something's, you know, not just... you know, not just the wind blowing the security camera, the sensors around. So just clear the bottom level, no fine, go up a set of stairs, and we make our way into a bathroom. So you walk into the bathroom, men's bathroom. There's multiple stalls, the urinal, basins, and just a standard bathroom. Looking around, one of the stalls is closed. And I look there, and I look under the stall, and I see a pair of legs sitting on the toilet, like sitting. I'm like, wait, he's in there. And so I bang on the door. Police come out now. We know you're in there. As soon as I bang and announce myself, my mammoth starts barking. Ruh, 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 ruh. That's sort of his training taking over. I says nothing. Just sits there. So I go, police, come out now. I send the dog. And nothing. I'm like, shit. All right. This guy's, mate, we know you're in there. Come out. Nothing. So I was like, bloody hell, what are you going to do? So I said, look, he's not coming out. We're going to get him out somehow. So let's just kick the door down. So I boot the door in. Mammoth's doing backflips by the stage because there's been like a lot of racket from me. I'm banging on the door. I kick the door down. I'm yelling at the, like, through the door before I kicked it down. He's barking. I kick the door down, and there's this, otherwise it opens. I see a little Chinaman sitting on the toilet with his pants down. I was like, mate, get out now. Like, what are you doing here? And he's like, Bankstown 14 goes in, grabs him, takes him like off the toilet, and like, wait, what are you doing? He's like, I cleaner. And we're like, you're the cleaner? What are you doing? You're not meant to be here. Like, we got told you're not meant to. He's like, he couldn't speak a word of English. All he kept saying was, I clean. So we're like, oh, all right, mate, you have some ID on you. And we just said, yeah, he had an ID. And so let's go outside and we'll check your details. And he said, oh, can I? You saw made signs. Can he finish to wipe?
Shit himself, literally.
It was in the best place for it. So
100%.
We got to make sure. We got to keep the door open, mate. And we cleared it all up, and like didn't contact the call center prior to, and in the end, and the guy was there lawfully, and but I just always look back and think, you know, what would have been going through that guy's head at that time when we come storming in that bathroom, banging on the door, yelling in a foreign language with a dog barking. Like, I think he would be like, what the fuck is going on? I am literally going to die. But yeah, it was all right. And yeah, that was just one of the funniest stories that.
100%. cool. So, let's, I suppose, fast forward 2022, was it?
Was what?
Was it finished up?
In the cops, yeah. Officially dismissed in 2022.
Yep. And started the private dog training business.
Yeah. So I'll go back before that. So
yeah.
A bit of reason how I got dismissed. Well, let's rewind all the way back to 2019. And that was when this world started getting a bit funny. And I'm not sure if you remember, if I had in Queensland a great toilet paper footage.
Mm-hmm.
People started freaking out because toilet paper was starting to disappear off the shelves. Yep. And people started hoarding toilet paper. Do you remember?
Yeah, I do remember.
Yeah. So that was sort of a strange thing to happen. I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. I've never seen this before. And I lived in Sydney. I was like, oh, geez, I could see it happening. Like, it was like people were like literally sprinting, just load up on toilet paper. I was like, man, imagine if something like actually proper went wrong in the supply chain. Like, imagine if like no fuel or no meat could get into areas where like into the city. Could you imagine just the outbreak of carnage that would occur? And I was like, oh, I have a young family, and I was like, well, I don't think the city is going to be the place to raise this family. Like, let's start making plans to get out. And so that's sort of what started the whole me looking to leave Sydney. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to stay in the dog unit dearly. So I was looking for regional dog handler spots and applied for one and didn't get it. They're pretty rare and they're pretty sought after. And me being a junior handler, it wasn't going to be an easy feat to get. Anyway, so I didn't get that one. And this is when now COVID starts ramping up and like that sort of weirdness starts happening with masks and like mandate, like not mandates because that wasn't said, but like the vaccine started and started being rolled out. And oh, they were like, they booked me in to get one of the first ones, you know, because we're a specialist unit, we were allowed to get the first in, for the first allocation of the shot. And I was like, oh, they put me down to go get one. I was like, look, no, I'm fine. And at that stage, the union said, yep, no, this is totally, totally voluntary program. You don't have to get it. You don't want it. Perfect. Cool. Cops got my back. I'm set. But the city, like, it started getting real weird city. And I said, look, I've got to get out with my man. I don't want to stay here with them. So I ended up leaving the dog unit and taking a lockup keeper spot in a little one-man town up in on the border of New South Wales and Queensland called Woodumbong.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure if you heard of it. It's tiny. Yeah, you do? Yeah. So a tiny little place up there just to be out of like the furthest place away from, you know, the craziness that was happening. Like I was shutting down kids' playgrounds or taping it all off. I was like, look, let me go somewhere where that is not going to happen. We'll be like the last place on earth that would happen. And yeah, so moved me and my family up to Woodumbong and was working there and was just as I missed the dog unit though. That was hard. But I was able to, because I left the dog unit on good grounds, they offered me my dog to retire to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to take Mammoth after 3 months. So I went, he still stayed around, did some operational work for another handler. But I was after that, I was able to, he was able to be retired to me and went down and picked him up. And fortunately, I did that because what ended up happening with the cops, they obviously, as you know, put the vaccine mandate in.
Yep.
And that put me in a really hard spot because just for me, it wasn't the right decision for me. And eventually they made a mandate that all police had to have at least two shots by I think it was 30th November. Yep. And I wasn't going to do it, so I went off and was never worked in the cops again after that. So that was on September 22nd. That was my operational shift, and then I just was a bit lost and didn't know what to do, what was going to happen, because they didn't tell you you're going to get dismissed. They sort of said, look, you'll be under managerial action will be taken. So whatever that meant, I had no idea. I sort of think the worst, but when I'd call and try and find out someone, everyone said, they don't know.
Yeah.
So fast forward to March 2022, I was officially dismissed from the New South Wales Police Force for disobeying a reasonable direction. And that was the end of my policing career. So that's what stopped me working in the job I loved. Unfortunately, you know, it took a turn down a path which I wasn't happy to go down. But these things happen, mate. And yeah, so that's how I ended my time with the police. I look back on it with fond memories, but yeah, that's the story behind that.
Yeah, for sure. And look, you know, look, mate, I have a number of friends that were in Queensland Corrective Services that chose to, went down the same path, you know. They certainly still can, you know, miss it dearly as well, you know. But like you said, that's, you know, one of those unfortunate, unfortunate things. But in saying, sometimes out of a negative, there's a positive, right?
Oh, definitely, mate. There's always silver lining and to anything like that. And by the time you're just like, what am I going to do? Like, you just had your, you know, what was a secure job, just, you know, someone just feels like they're taken from you. So it was sort of like, but you know what, you're a little bit, you know, bitter at first and you just move on. No one cares at the end of the day, mate. So you just got to go, okay, that's happened. How can I make the most of the situation? What happened after that? I just worked, you know, around that time, that was around the time of Lismore floods.
Yeah.
So that was another massive event, which was devastating. I was only an hour away from Lismore, but Wootabong's up in the mountains. So I didn't really, not much flooding happened there, if any. It sort of moved quite quickly and just flooded Lismore. So I lost my job in the cops, and 2 days later I got a phone call saying, hey, do you want to help with the recovery, the demo of like the big shopping plaza in Lismore Square? There's a carpenter, a builder business there. He's looking to hire people who've been laid off from the mandate. And I was like, paid really well, almost paid pretty much what I was getting paid in the cops, because I was desperate for workers. So I said, yeah, that's going to tie me and my family over till I can figure out what I'm going to do. So I got my white card and started becoming a bloody laborer. And then this is going to work around how I ended up starting my own dog business.
Yeah.
That job lasted about 6 months. That came to an end, and I still hadn't decided what I was going to do. Then I got some other, like, sometimes you got to hit rock bottom, and I got some like shit kicker jobs, man, in between. Like, I worked in a meat packing facility. I worked on a road crew. And like, it was in those times I was like, oh, I can't do this, man. This is not for me. I hit rock, like, man, I was like, this is not something I can do for a long time. So I just like, you know what? I'm going to, what am I good at? What are my skills? And I'm going to start my own dog training company. So I started two businesses, start my own dog training company, Summerland Dog Training, as well as started my own jiu-jitsu gym, which I'm a big part of my life, Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So I started two businesses. And that's what sort of, you know, was the catalyst for me to start my dog training business, hitting rock bottom.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, not too many of my listeners know this, but some do. But, you know, I have a very similar story. I worked underground the mines in, out at Emerald I just transitioned, hated it. Then I opened a kettlebell training gym. And my dog training business, Dogs and Deadlifts.
Yeah, mate, it's sometimes like you need that, like you need to be able to hit rock bottom so you can push up off it, you know?
Yeah.
And the like when you're in that mode, you're like, oh, I don't care. I'm like, I was working like, you know, 18-hour days just on my business, like getting websites and logos and, you know, developing, you know, training programs and all sorts of stuff. And I was fully focused, and it was amazing. I had like a superpower where I could just, like, had hyper focus on this task, and I was able to get my business started in 21 days and before I had my first client and like website and everything. And it was just, it was really good. So
awesome. And we're going to talk about some of the programs that you're offering very, very shortly. Primarily looking, I love Northern New South Wales. I grew up Coffs Harbour, Bellingen, that area. Played plenty of rugby league against the guys from Casino, Guy Ogle, spent a lot of time there. Beautiful part of the world, yeah.
Yeah, very nice up here, yeah, for sure.
Now I'm in Toowoomba, it's still not too far away, but certainly love that area. So you service those sort of areas, but really I guess why I wanted to reach out. Obviously, I love sort of origin stories, you know, your police background, but also, you know, in the last 12 to 18 months, there's been a shift around a number of areas, primarily, let's just say, sports scent detection, and also moving into what I call man trailing. And, you know, we'll just off the air before we were talking about terminology, you know, you know, something that I really wanted to talk about with you in regards to your track trail program, your grading system, and how that sort of came about, that you're offering as well.
Yeah. So what would you like to know?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, how, you know, coming from that, was that, you know, one of the first, you know, what was, when I think, when I went out on my own, you know, as a dog trainer, I'm thinking puppy schools or puppy basic obedience, you know, the general stuff that everyone else out there is doing, right? And it wasn't only until I really sat down and had a good think about my skill set, what I'm interested in and what is different, is where I, you know, pursued my man trailing and my sports scent detection. And I don't call it nose works, but, you know, they're very, you know, the same sort of stuff, right? So your track trail program, were you, you know, how did that just pop into your head or what, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I started off very similar. Like, I was like, well, okay, I need to make money. What's my bread and butter going to be? And I'm like thinking around like behavioral issues. Like people have dogs everywhere here. They don't look like sporting dogs. They look like pet dogs. And okay, so what's going to provide me with income? And I was like, behavioral. Okay, I can do that. And just started off with my main client, like advertisers, you know, behavioral problem fixing. So that's basically how I started. And that went great. You know, people would jump, like I was busy. I had a lot of, you know, clients, in the first couple of weeks, and then word started getting around and more people started hitting me up, because in Kyle, there's nothing anywhere for dog training up here. Like it's crazy. I thought, you know, there was something in Lismore, not too far, but I don't know, like, there's nothing really any, like, and apparently she's always booked out. And I was like, well, I just happened to fall into a good location. But that's not really where my passion lies. My passion lies in, you know, working dog sports, like tracking, man work, obedience. I love that stuff. And that's where my skill set does really lie. So whilst I still offer behavioral lessons and privates, I've now started slowly not advertising as much, and just now really pumping out like my tracking workshops, my obedience, and my, you know, man work protection sports stuff. So how that happened, like you, man, I just really thought like, this is what I want to do, but I didn't think there'll be any market for people wanting to do tracking. I was like, why would anyone want to learn how to track? Like that has zero real world application. Like it's not like you can obedience, have your dog walk in a nice heel way down the street. Like that makes sense. Or, you know, you can, there's like a sport out there for agility, and you know, you can have your dog, you know, that it just made no sense. Why would anyone want to learn? What do they get out of it? Like, so I was like, nah, look, no one's gonna, and I sort of softly sort of introduced it. I was like, look, would anyone want to start a tracking club? So I started like Northern Rivers Tracking Club and had like one or two people sort of reach out. It wasn't really, I did once, and just free, all free, mate. I just wanted somewhere I could get like group people who could lay me tracks and I could, what I loved. And that's how it started, mate. So I started just my own like not-for-profit tracking club on the side. And then it wasn't actually till I did a tracking workshop with Jeremy Winkler.
Yep.
Canine, and I went there and I was like, yeah, you know, that'd be great. And I said, you know what, I see how you operate. I said, I could do this. This is not something I have the skills, I have the know-how, and it seems straightforward to me to be able to offer it. So then I went back home, and it was a great workshop, by the way, Jeremy, thank you very much. And I went back home and I said, you know what, I'm gonna run my first workshop, first one's for free as well, so I can get the logistics of it, get the understanding of pacing and how to actually structure it. And I got sold out, was fully booked in, you know, a day. And I was like, oh, okay, interesting. People's like, let me know the next one. So I did the first one, went really well, then started. I was like, oh, okay. Then I was like, well, I can actually, you know, make this profitable. And I said, well, okay, doing another one, $100 per person for the whole day. And that's how I sort of priced it as well. I keep my classes are really small. Like I have four people, and I was like, that's it. Cause that way I feel I can give the most value to the, you know, I'm not going to get rich doing it, but I'm saying I'd like to get remunerated for the amount of effort I'm putting in. So I was like, you know, that would be great if I could have four people come, pay me some money, and I get to spend a day in nature tracking and doing something I love. So that's how the genesis of my tracking workshop started.
Yeah, awesome. And from there, you know, obviously, you know, if anyone is interested, you know, you developed your own basic sort of grading system within that as well, you know, because everyone loves a prize, right? You know?
Yeah, definitely. And look, you get inspiration from places and you like that. Like you like to have a goal to work towards. And my system is, I sort of teach in the holistic picture of things, track trail. Mm-hmm. Which incorporates aspects of tracking, which is defined as following a particular person's odor, footstep to footstep, mm-hmm. and to the end location, and trailing methods, which is for following a particular person's odor, which is typically in the air and surround. So I thought, you know, what did I do as a police dog handler? Like we get taught tracking styles in the novice course and throughout, mm-hmm. you know, nose down the ground, that's how we teach. And but once you're sent on your way with your dog in your car, like you're free to sort of expand and look elsewhere, like not officially, but you do, because you have all these hours of you and your dog, you want to improve your dog. So naturally you start looking at how other, you know, systems can be used. And I really found it beneficial when I could teach my dog track and trailing at the same time, because each system to me, tracking has its inherent strengths and inherent weaknesses, as well as trailing. And if I could combine the two, well, then I'm strengthening the weaknesses of tracking, and I'm also strengthening weaknesses of trailing systems. So that way I'm have a more encompassing method for the dog to use. Mm-hmm. And what I found out that, primarily, I love my dog when he's tracking nose on the ground. Okay, he's nose on the ground. He's going at a good pace and he's following, because that's accurate. I know that that's where the track's been. But what gets tricky is when there's environmental factors in play. So things like time, wind, heat, and the surface might push the odor that's there no longer to where it was on the footstep. It might push it a couple meters away in a gutter, along a fence line. And that's when you might need to use your dog's scenting and trailing abilities to keep the track going, so you can then eventually, hopefully, get back on the actual true track. And that's what I found, that's what my dog would do. Yep. That's what I've sort of didn't really know that's what it was doing until I sat down and I thought about it. I said, what is my dog doing? He's not tracking like an IGP style. Mm-hmm. He's not trailing like in a pure trailing sense. He's doing both. And I sort of think of it as the tracking is there as your primary role, and the trailing comes in as almost a secondary backup system should the track fail.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I get excited talking about this shit, you know, like, you know, I'm on, you know, 100% on board with you. I believe that, a dog, depending on what, you know, providing we're not, you know, IPO or IPG or ANKC tracking, you know, the stuff that I do, I like to see a combination of both, right? You know, it's super, I think it's super sexy when they need it.
Yeah, oh, definitely. And I'm just, yeah, dropping some knowledge. I'm sorry to everyone has no idea what I'm talking about. But for those who know, like, they will understand, like, you know, this, it's an art, and you sort of, there's no one right way to do it. But no, I sort of really, when I sat down and thought about what is my dog actually doing, he's doing a combination of both. And that's when he got the best results.
Yeah, for sure. And that's what, you know, something that I like, you know, you call it your track trail program, you know, and, you know, look, you don't have to preach to the choir here, mate. and most of my listeners, will understand. And if not, they'll definitely seek you out for sure. So you want to just talk about just briefly your grading system and how you sort of, you know, what type of grading system there is that you use?
Yeah, so in my grading system, there's categories. So there's a soft surface category, mm-hmm. there's a surface category, and then there's a hard surface category. Mm-hmm. And within each of those categories are different standards before you can get graded. So, for example, soft surface level 1, is a 30-minute old track, minimum 500 meters long, and with at least one corner. Okay, so once you get that done, you are now certified as a level one dog and handler. And obviously, as the levels go up, the difficulty and distance and time increases. So the next one is on level two and soft service is 1,000 meters long, an hour aged, at least two corners. So you can progress the whole way through. And once you get to level three, that's the maximum you can get in that surface. And then like a mixed surface would be a combination of soft and hard. So thinking like, you know, you've got road crossings, you have driveways, and then the hard surface, which is, I'm really excited about the hard surface stuff, because that's just pure 100% no hard surface, like no soft surface. So in like a CBD, but with that one, it's hard. So we bring the time right back down. Level one's 5 minutes old and like 150 meters. So even though it's a short time, but think about the surface is now a lot harder. So when you make one parameter harder, you got to bring down the other parameters as well. So you can, because there's no point, you're not going to do a hard surface 150 meter track an hour old in a CBD area. Like, that is not going to work. I don't care. I've never seen that happen. If you can, I'll be very impressed.
That's right. But, come see you.
yeah, let me know. But like, from my experience, like, you know, I've tracked in all sorts of environments operationally. And if I saw that, you know, bag snatch, you know, Central Station, can we get a dog? I'm just like, no, there's way too many people there. There's way too many, you know, competing odors and time to get there. I just say it's not operationally viable for me to get there. So, but if it was 5 minutes old, minimal foot traffic, yeah, that's something we can work within. So yeah, I really like that stuff. And that's haven't done a hard surface urban tracking workshop yet. And that's something I'm going to be implementing in the warmer months, because now summer's come about. Like, my last workshop, I saw the largest black snake of my life. It's just this time of year around here, snakes are everywhere. So I got to be mindful of that. Yeah, so now I'm going to transition from, you know, doing it in like state forests now to more urban style tracking. We'll work at night. We'll start at like sunset and work into the night. I think it'll be a really cool sort of experience for people if they're interested. Look out for that one.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, so I've just started doing some evening, the exact same thing, some evening sessions with my regular crew, you know, and just like, I'm like, all right, headlamps from here, you know. I managed to get a couple of rechargeable dog collars that light up, you know, for people at Anaconda. They were like $20, you know, super cheap, you know, but also, you know, people love it, you know, absolutely enjoying the evening, you know, and obviously the weather's a bit cooler as well.
Yes, no, definitely. And I love tracking the, I think like something about that, it's really, something scent sort of seems to linger more in the night, maybe because there's less wind, no UV, and it's sort of an easier tracking experience. I find like night work in the cops was in the dog unit was the best. Like that's where you get all your, that's where you get all your catches from, basically. But another thing, with my system that I say, if you grade your dog up to a level three soft surface and that dog no longer is around, like passed away, you don't work that dog anymore, you still retain your level three certification for that surface, but you'll be a level three. If you haven't bring a new dog, you'll be a level three handler with a level zero dog. So you will always retain that grade because you've worked that dog up to that standard. I don't think it's fair if you then get a new dog, you and the dog both start on level one. So that's something different that I implemented in my grading system, that the grade that you get, that's what you stay as. And you and the dog are separate grades. So if you start a new dog, you got to start dog level zero, get to level one dog, level three handler, level two dog, level three handler. That level will always stay the same with you because you done the work together.
Yeah. Awesome. And what, you know, are you finding, you know, I can only speak for myself, but what, you know, before I jump in, what sort of people are coming to you? Like, are they, you know, and what sort of dogs are you seeing do this, you know?
A large variety of people, like surprisingly, a lot of females, a lot of women, you know, mid, you know, 40s, 50s, even 60s, mm-hmm. And everything in between. Like, guys, girls, it really, you can't guess who's going to come. Mm. And the variety of dogs, you name it. Like, I've had obviously the obvious Shepherds, Malinois, had GSPs, Jack Russell, a Coolie, mm-hmm. all sorts of Border Collies. Like, yeah, any sort of dog. I think, you know, the breed of the dog is less important than people think.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and you know everything that I've done, and you know, I've seen everything from you know, when we went down to Geelong and did a workshop, we had Chihuahuas, we had Chow Chows, you know, like I said, Coolies, you name it, Labradoodles, Oodles, all the Oodles, you know, and we have here in Toowoomba as well, a variety of different people coming along.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's definitely an eclectic mix.
Mm. And people are looking for, you know, something different to do with their dogs. And I find that, you know, it's low impact. It's, as you mentioned, out in nature, outside, and they're having a great fun. And it's a bit of a thrill, you know, when you find, you know, that person, right?
Oh, yeah. And this is a question I ask most of my days. I say, why do you do it? Like, tell me, like, what do you get out of it? And, mm-hmm. like, I'm interested to see what you get out of it. Like, what do you... When you're tracking, what feeling do you get? Like,
yeah, for sure. You know, so my dog, Noah, he is 8.5-year-old GSP, and, you know, he's a firecracker, right? You know, you know, I've had Malinois, German Shepherds all my life, bred both Malinois and Dutch Shepherds. And this guy, you know, on a, you know, he goes, you know, and I just, it's the thrill, yeah. Like, you know, there's definitely, you know, I don't have a, you know, we're not doing it operationally, but, you know, it is a, it's a thrill. And when we find that person, yeah, you know, where he gets a food reward, he doesn't get a, you know, obviously Malinois, I've done it previously, get, you know, they get bites, you know, but it's a real, a bit of an adrenaline kick, you know, I love it.
For sure. Yeah. It's a drug, like, especially even like now I'm no longer operation, but especially when I was operation, like, it was like you're addicted. You get like the high, like, you don't, like, nothing smooth. Like, imagine you're tracking along for an armed defender and it's pitch black and you come around the corner and you see an arm there. You're like, what? You like, it's a shot of dopamine like you've never had in your life. And you're just like, what the heck? And you, after, like, you get them under control, place them under arrest, and you're sitting in your car and you're wired.
Yeah.
And it's falling like a drug. And it was a come down when I left, man. Like, it was like I was just maxed out redlining, just like, yeah, driving 180 Ks. And then when I went to Woodenbong, I don't know what I expected to happen. It was like I'm jumping on the brakes with double feet, just like bang. And I'm like, holy shit. Like, what is this slow down in pace? Like, what is this I'm experiencing? But yeah, so I think in that moment when you're tracking, like, this, you're so locked into that one task. I think it's why people enjoy doing anything, is like, you forget about your surroundings, your whole world focuses in, and for that brief moment you're not thinking about anything else. And I think any activity that gives you ability to do that is a really rewarding activity. And that's what I can sort of think why people do it, and that's why I do it, because in that moment, like, there's nothing else that matters. I'm just solely watching a dog, reading a dog, and at the end of it, if I get a catch at the end of that, or if I find the person at the end of the track,
yep,
brilliant. That's a very satisfying feeling, a feeling of pride and achievement to, yep, do that. And then the walk home back to the car is the best.
For sure. So, you know, I'll put this question to you as well, because obviously you do a bit of protection dog stuff, as you know, so I'm tipped on the other side of 40 now. The body's not holding up to, you know, where it used to in regards to catching dogs, etc. However, I know they're two different, let's just say protection versus you know, tracking, trailing. I get a kick that's almost on par. Yeah. You know, catching a dog on an arm or you know, on a bicep, and people might think I'm crazy, right? But that rush of, you know, that hit of dopamine, if you like, you know, for me it's very similar.
Yeah, I like tracking more. It's more, yeah, like tracking than catching dogs. I mean, seeing the development in dogs and building their, seeing them like improve each time, I love that. That's my favorite. Nothing beats like a track, a good track, and your dog is like you know, pin in the corners hard, and you're just like, oh, this is the best. Like, for me, that is because you're with the dog that whole time. Like, it's a team effort, and yeah, you that's nothing like that where you're. It's like you and the dog are the same entity. And you know, bite work's great. I love it too, but like tracking is my favorite by far.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I find that more with obedience as well. Like healing routine, I love that because you're locked into that dog as well. The bite, you send your dog. Your dog's independent of you a lot of the time, and you come in as sort of like, you know, cheerleader almost. But obedience I love as well. Like getting in that zone for your dog, and you're both flowing in that state, and you're like weaving between the legs. That's really cool as well. Anytime you can get in that flow state, I find that's really easy to get in with tracking. A little bit hard to get that in obedience, and hard to get a flow state in bite work, I think, because it's just a different setup of of an activity for the dog.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, awesome. All right, mate. You know, we've been chatting for a little while now, you know. We'll wrap it up, but you know, it's been a fantastic chat, and you know, I presume, you know, we could talk for hours and hours on this, but you know, I wanted to, like I said, wanted to get you on, you know, talk a little bit about you know, what you're up to. If anyone's out there and they're like, hey, you know, this Paul guy sounds pretty cool, how can they reach out to you, mate?
Yeah, Instagram, Facebook, Summerland Dog Training's the best way. I also have a website, but reach me on those two social platforms, and I'll chat to you then.
Yeah, awesome. So, Paul, thank you very much once again for coming on. It's been a pleasure. And for those, like I said, reach out to Paul via Summerland Dog Training, and feel free to like, share, and subscribe to the Dogs and Deadlifts podcast. Looking forward to more conversations like this, and potentially we'll have to do a follow-up with for sure, mate.
Yeah, for sure. Sounds good.
Awesome. Thank you very much again.
Thank you.
Here at Dogs and Deadlifts, we are on a mission to education around the basis of nutrition, movement and body awareness, strength training for dogs. We align with like-minded business and therefore ensure we bring you the best advice and equipment. Today, we would like to introduce you to X-Dog Weight and Fitness Vest. If you want to maximize your dog's genetic potential, increase their power, speed, and endurance. At Dog and Deadlifts, we teach people how to ignite their dog's performance. Safe, systematic, and injury-free, using equipment like the X-Dog Weight and Fitness Vest. Get your X-Dog Vest and come join our community. Link and discount code in podcast notes.